So joining us now is Jeff Beresford Howe, the Takeaway's sports contributor and one-man tailgate party, who we haven't spoken to in a while, but we were dying to hear his reaction to what Major League Baseball players found out this week. They're losing an icon, not A-Rod, it's not Sammy Sosa, it's not an A-list player at all, but Donald Fear, the head of the Major League Players Union, who it's probably fair to say a lot of fans think of as the Darth Vader of baseball. Jeff Beresford Howe, what do you think of Donald Fear?
Well, Don Fear took a union that was struggling to continue to exist, and during his 26 years, he ended up running Major League Baseball. He, more than any other union leader in the United States, now runs his industry, and players are naturally very grateful to him for it.
Now, of course, players have benefited to an extraordinary degree, but are working people in America to take any sort of solace from the fact that here's a union leader who actually has taken control of his industry and done a heck of a job for the workers?
No, absolutely not. Don Fear's concept of a union is unique among all unions in the United States. He runs a union that benefits only the very highest earners in his union. The vast majority of professional baseball players never see any of the huge income that we've come to associate with Major League Baseball. It's a union which is, you know, a lot of ways more like a guild than a union. It operates to protect that top 1% of earners and leaves everybody else behind.
Well, let's take a look at his legacy and try to tick it off for us. You've mentioned the salaries that have gone through the roof under his tenure. What else happened in the time that he's been head of the players' union?
The most important thing is that he's acted as a check on Bud Selig, who is, there's no other way to put it, he's a chucklehead. He's one of the worst administrators in any industry in the United States, and every time Bud Selig comes up with some crazy idea, Don Fair has been there to say, no, can't
All right.
do that.
Well, that's actually a positive, and of course Bud Selig is the Major League Baseball commissioner.
Yes. In name, although, of course, now at this point, Don Fear has vastly more power than Selig actually does.
Right. There were how many strikes during Donald Fear's tenure?
You know, in all the confusion, I lost track. 5 or 6, I guess.
Wow. And I have 2 by my count here. What about the steroid controversy? I mean, that happened on his watch.
It happened on his watch, and he's taken a huge amount of criticism for it. Bob Costas called him 100% wrong the other day. The truth is that Don Fear's stand on steroids came out of the drug scandals of the 80s when Major League Baseball owners tried to use drug testing and investigatory commissions to force players to rat out each other and get out from under long-term contracts that they were committed to. It was a shameful and cynical use of the war on drugs, and that is what informed Fear's decision to back away from drug testing. Now, he probably stayed away from drug testing and a recognition that steroids are a different issue than cocaine and marijuana use for too long, but the real responsibility for the lack of testing in baseball isn't Don Fear's. It's the owners and their attitude towards drugs in the 80s.
But here is Don Fear expressing some contrition in front of Congress in January of last year.
We cannot change, but we can learn from the past. Baseball's problem with performance-enhancing substances was bigger than I realized. We understood that a number of years ago when we began the testing programs. In retrospect, action should have been taken and probably could have been taken sooner.
Jeff Beresford Howe, I wonder if Donald Fear has any regrets about the informal tests that the union took that resulted ultimately in A-Rod being exposed for having tested positive for a controlled substance.
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, he says he's using it as a convenient point now to say this is the point at which we knew it was serious. And the advantage of that from his point of view is that the union then began to move off its anti-testing perspective and admit the possibility of testing. It's inconceivable to everybody around baseball that Fear didn't know about it before then and just chose to not deal with the owners and open up the issue of drug testing again.
So who is going to replace Donald Fear as we think about a transition and a sort of a next act here?
Mike Weiner, who's been a lawyer for the Players Association for the last few years, he is I guess, the George H.W. Bush to Fear's Ronald Reagan. He didn't go through the same kind of trial by fire that Fear did. He's generally considered kinder and gentler and more likely to agree with owners in ways to make the sport a little less confrontational in its labor negotiations.
Finally, if some constituency of players in Major League Baseball was going to demand a shift in emphasis or a change of course in the players' union, who would that be?
Two groups. Latin players who have been virtually ignored by the sport. They have special needs and special circumstances different from American players, and it's the unions essentially ignored those special needs. And the other group is the vast majority of professional players who never make Major League Baseball or barely make Major League Baseball, who are limited in their both compensation and training by the way this current system works.
Many,
and the union is acceded to.
Well, they're many in numbers, but their voice is small here. Jeff Beresford Howe, the Takeaway Sports contributor and one-man tailgate party, talking about the Darth Vader of baseball, by some accounts, Donald Fear, retiring as head of the players' union. Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.